Welcome to ACC Nation. We wrap up our Voices of Football preview series with Gene Deckerhoff of Florida State and Matt Park of Syracuse. Our interview is coming up in just a few moments. The AVCA Preseason Coaches Volleyball Top 25 debuts with Stanford at number 1. Pitt is number 12. Louisville 25. Florida State in the receiving votes category at number 31. In case you haven't heard, the new ACC Network hits the air on Thursday the 22nd with most worthy content providers carrying it. Those that aren't, those disconnect notices will be hot and heavy this week. Speaking of the network, the reigning women's soccer national champs, Florida State, host number 16, Wisconsin, on Sunday, August 25th at 2 p.m. Eastern. That is on ACC Network. Beginning in 2020, for a six-year run, the ACC will face off against a Pac-12 team in the San Diego County Credit Union Holiday Bowl. That's a mouthful. Some quick notes from the NCAA. The organization altered their agent certification requirements twice. The first time in the original announcement, and then, after backlash, they changed the college degree requirement. In baseball, the NCAA approved the 22nd action rule for pitchers. It's designed to speed the game up. Look for a new pitch clock at a stadium near you. And congrats to Georgia Tech's Andy Ogletree for winning the U.S. Amateur Championship. Hey, a shout-out, Will, to Jerry, who's a big fan of whoseplace.com and recommended that we add it to our links. Done, Jerry, and thanks for the suggestion.
Will, yes, absolutely. Whose Place is a good spot for some UVA recruiting stuff and stuff like that. So definitely recommend that place.
Yeah, I thought it was a good recommendation, too. I will just say that, you know, one of the hardest things about adding links is that there's plenty of sites that we go to and we check out, but sometimes we just kind of forget that, oh, well, do we have them on our link page or not? We'd like to share as much information as possible. So I'll just tell you that if you have a place that you really like to go to and check out and it's got good information and you want to share that with us, just go to our links page at accnation.net. Let us know. Drop us a note. Tell us, just like Jerry did. It was just that simple. I got the note and I said, okay, you know, when I sit down at the computer, I will do just that. And that was the first thing I did. I want you to know that, Jerry, because I take that stuff very seriously. Hey, let's look at the NFL for a moment. Duke's Daniel Jones in his, it's not his debut, but it was his second game. And his debut against the Jets, he looked really good. A lot of promise. I would just say this, when he played against the Bears, and he was playing basically twos and threes, he's a rookie, and he showed it. But overall, I've been pretty impressed with Daniel Jones. You know, that first year playing football in the NFL coming out of college, it speeds things up. And, you know, did you get a chance to see any of that game?
No, I did not.
Because it was the Bears. I see how it is. Well, I watched the Vikings, you know, just so you know. You know,
I just was unable to watch the game.
Mm-hmm. You were unable. Okay. No details. ESPN, way too early, top 25 basketball, Michigan State, Kansas, Kentucky, Florida. And then at number 5, it's Louisville, 6, Duke, UNC at 8, and number 15, it's Virginia. That's it. That's it. There's no more. That's not too off. It's really off the beaten path.
I still think Louisville should be number 2 behind Michigan State. That's just the way. That's just the way I feel about Louisville this year.
Yeah, I think they will be after a game or two. Yeah. It was kind of funny because when I read this the first time, I was sort of like Michigan State, Kansas, Kentucky. What are we, is throwback or something? Sports Illustrated, way too early. Women's basketball, only one ACC team there. Number 9, Notre Dame. The rest of it is pretty much Pac-12 dominant. That will be interesting. We'll, as we get closer to the season, we'll get a little more accurate because this, I think, came out in like April. But it'll be a little more accurate when we get closer to the season. So I'll just put it that way. Mm-hmm. This past week began with Miami fans being used as guinea pigs for a new stun gun. Jaren Williams was named the starting quarterback by Manny Diaz over N'Kozie Perry and Tate Martell. And as you've said, you're not too surprised about this. And you had some information about Tate Martell.
Yeah, he ended up taking some snaps this week at wide receiver. I think he might be realizing that he is not he's not going to be a quarterback for Miami at least this year. So he's trying out a wide receiver to see if he can get away onto the field, and we'll see how that plays out. But this is him just wanting to be on the field and contribute as much as he can, and he feels like this is the only way to do it. And mm-hmm. Wide receiver is not a spot where Miami has a ton of depth. I mean, they do have Jeff Thomas, who I really like, but a lot of uncertainty outside of that.
I'm not familiar with Martell's speed, so I don't know whether or not he's got the smarts as a quarterback. And quarterbacks definitely see the field. They have a much better feel. And a lot of guys who go from quarterback to wide receiver have a lot of success because they understand the game better than most. They have this rhythm going on in their head already and make good connections with whoever is quarterbacking. One of the things I think that Tate Martell was short on was arm strength. And that's part of why Jaren Williams took his spot, or presumed spot. Mm-hmm. We had our conversation about N'Kozie Perry and the comments by Joe Zagacki in our interview a couple weeks back.
Yeah, definitely go back and listen to it. That's a great interview.
Yes, it is. Meanwhile, Dave Clawson named Jamie Newman the starting quarterback for Wake Forest. Any surprises there?
A little bit. I mean, I knew it was going to be a tough decision either way. Newman, came in relief of Hartman after he suffered a seasoning and ending injury. And Hartman had proved he was, a very capable quarterback in those first eight games. But Newman came in those final four games and completed 61% of his passes and threw 9 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. And he did some damage against both NC State and Duke, winning on the road at both spots. So he showed a lot for Dave Clawson. And yeah, I was taking a look. I was looking at Les Johns, who runs Wake Forest 24/7 site, mm-hmm. and he pulled out their first team offense, and I tell you what, that they're pretty legit at those skill positions. With Newman at quarterback, I like Kate Kearney at running back, the wide receiver Scotty Washington, and they got to have Kendall Hinton, former quarterback, coming out of the slot, which will be interesting. Ooh, yeah. To see how he handles that transition. So the question is how well that offensive line will play this year.
Well, they're predicated on speed. Stan Cotton, mm-hmm. who was in the Voices Up preview, gave us a really good look at Wake Forest and what to expect. And I think that sped up offense is going to help them from the standpoint of whether or not that line is solid. Boy, they do have some offensive weapons there. Kearney and Hinton alone. You could just talk about those two. I love watching Cade Kearney run. And Stan pointed out that he's one of those old school, I want to hit you and just keep grinding and run over top of you type of players. And he's pretty exciting to watch. He's a fun player. That should be a good season for Wake Forest and Dave Clawson's group down there. Next up, Mack Brown goes with Sam Howell at North Carolina. We're not surprised by that.
No, not at all. I mean, a lot of people thought that was going to be the case when he committed, and he pretty much won going away. And I don't think it was that close. And he showed a lot in these summer practices. And a lot of people think he will be a contender for freshman of the year. He's a guy who was one of the top quarterbacks in the country coming out of high school in the class of 2019. And he's going to have a lot on his shoulders. I mean, luckily the expectations won't be very high for him this year. So if he can lead UNC to potentially a bowl game, mm-hmm. he'll do wonders there.
I'm still sticking with, it's a gut feel, and I can't explain this any more than just a gut feel, but all these conversations that we've had
with the play-by-play voices and the color analyst in one particular instance from Pitt, but Jones Angel giving us a little bit of an insight into North Carolina. They really look, you know, like they have a lot of potential. And let's just put aside what happened last year, because there's a lot of injuries, but there's a lot of players coming in. And with this new look, new feel, new coach, coaching staff, a pretty exciting coaching staff for that matter, a lot of talent. North Carolina, I think, might be a surprise team. I'm going to keep my eye on them. I really want to see how they do in their first game. I think that's going to be a tell game. Much like that Pitt-Virginia game is going to be a tell game, we're going to find out just who these two teams are. You know, when the Panthers and Cavaliers get together, that's going to be, we're going to find out who you really are. It's not going to, you know, say that's the rest of the season is going to be like that by any stretch. But if there's, you know, a lot of excitement and potential there, and they come out, you know, really going at it and are successful in offense and defense, North Carolina could be a very big surprise for the rest of the conference. We'll see.
Yeah, a whole new attitude, you know, around that program this year, and will be interesting to see what how things translate.
Let's move ahead here to the AP preseason top 25. That's going to be released this week. I don't have it in front of me, obviously. The big question for me: will it still be full of homer votes that make absolutely no sense? Your thoughts?
Yeah, probably to some extent. I mean, it's, you know, we know who the top two teams are. It's going to be in some order Clemson and Alabama. We've gone over who we think it'll be here. We all have Clemson, and we're not being necessarily ACC homers here. We just legitimately think Clemson's the best team in the country going into the season, and Alabama's riding in their coattails. It's, you know, after that, I think a lot of people think Georgia will be number three, and then it gets a little more up in the air after that. Mm-hmm. I like Oklahoma personally at number four. Then I like Michigan at five, and you know, I could see Ohio State being right up there too, depending on how everything meshes with new head coach, new quarterback, new ideas all around. But they're obviously still a very talented team.
I think this is going to be overall just a very exciting football season in general. There's a lot of question marks, but I think those question marks are going to be just absolutely, you know, erased in week one. And there's going to be just a lot of players standing out, a lot of great talent just waiting to prove themselves and to become that next star. So I'm looking forward to that. We'll be looking at a couple of teams in the ACC Nation Power Poll, which debuts this week, and some side thoughts on the Week Zero Miami-Florida game. That's coming up in just a moment. What kind of challenges are ahead for Willie Taggart? We continue the Voices of Football preview series with Gene Deckerhoff, the voice of the Florida State Seminoles. Seminoles head coach Willie Taggart returns for his second season and brings some new faces to his staff. One of the more notable is Kendall Briles, who takes over the offense. Taggart is a more than capable architect of turnarounds. Gene, now that he knows what the score is after year one, is Coach Taggart executing a Tallahassee turnaround?
Well, a Tallahassee turnaround sounds good to me, and I definitely feel that, you know, 5-7 was a rugged year for Seminole fans and Seminole faithful, and also for head coach Willie Taggart and staff and the team. In 2019, it's going to be a better year, I'll promise you that. And just started this weekend, and heck, we're ready to put toe to leather, get this season going, and forget about 2018.
We'll get into a breakdown of the offense, defense, and special teams in a moment. But first, outside of Florida, the media focuses on the what-ifs. Let's talk about something a little more concrete. The changes in the coaching staff. Who's new, and what do they bring to the game?
Well, you got a new offensive coordinator. You mentioned Kendall Briles. And he comes in with an acquaintance of his as they've worked together, offensive line coach Randy Clements. Two areas that the Seminoles really had difficulty in last year. We scored 33 touchdowns last year. That's not a big number. Compare that to 2013 national championship season, when the Seminoles led the nation with 94 total touchdowns. That's about a 61 touchdown difference. see what it takes to win championships. You got to score a lot of points. So you bring in an offensive coordinator that has tremendous credentials. He obviously began his career at Baylor. He was a wide receiver at Baylor, and he's last coach at Houston. But he brings in an offense that, good golly, averaged like 512 yards a game last year. That's a lot of yards. That's about 200 yards more a game than Florida State averaged. So if he brings that same offense and it has that same success, the Noles will score more touchdowns, Jim, and win more football games.
Let's go down to the field, and we'll take a closer look at the defense first. This group was kind of hamstrung last season with being on the field too much and, quite frankly, awful field position to boot. The defensive line, five linemen return. Names like Wilson, Durden, they stand out, but also lots of young blood on the roster. Talk to us about the guys in the trenches.
Well, you mentioned the two big guys, Corey Durden and Marvin Wilson. They'll be side by side. They both have starting experience. And I'll tell you, Marvin Wilson came out of high school, number one defensive tackle prospect in the country, and he has certainly lived up to that. He's a junior. He's never redshirted. Big fella, very quick, very nimble, and that's what it takes to play. Defensive tackle, he'd be a nose tackle or the five technique or three technique tackle. But Corey Durden's just a big, big body. And the Noles have some other big guys in that line. Odell Higgins is the senior assistant head coach. In fact, he's the longest tenured coach on the Florida State staff. In fact, maybe, let me think, basketball, now that Mike Martin is retired after 40 years as the head baseball coach, Odell Higgins is the longest tenured coach, period, at Florida State University. And he always has that defensive line. He's also taken over the defensive ends this year. Josh McCando is a guy that I think is going to break out this year. We lose Brian Burns to the NFL draft. I believe he was the 12th pick, 12th or 15th, somewhere in there, by the Carolina Panthers. He left with a year of eligibility remaining. 24 sacks over the last three in his career. We lose that. But I think Josh McCando, who had to sort of wait his turn when Brian Burns was in the lineup, is going to have a breakout season. Highly touted coming out of IMG Academy down in Bradenton. And Janaris Robinson will probably move into that starting position on the left side, opposite Kando. And those are two very good defensive ends. We'll have to find out in preseason practice who the backups are going to be. Quite honestly, there's a lot of guys out there that look good, but let's wait and see who the coaches think are the best to fill that front five, front six in the defensive line.
Gene, let's take a look at linebacker now. Two return, among them Dontavius Jackson. Last year, McCray and Rice had some health issues, and hopefully they're over that and moving forward. How's this group looking?
Well, the Dontavius Jackson has been, I think he's got some preseason mentioned on a watch list or two, and I think he's going to be solid in the middle. They got some young linebackers that I saw in the spring that sort of, you know, jumped out and looked like they might be able to play. Linebacker was a problem last year because of injuries and depth. This year, hopefully, the injuries aren't as heavy as they were a year ago, and some of these guys will be able to shine. But I think that Jackson in the middle has that thing pretty well settle down, and he'll be a leader on that defense. The secondary is going to be extremely, extremely good, maybe as good a secondary as the Seminoles have had in a long time.
Yeah, when you talk about that secondary, it looks like it's loaded. Lars, Woodby, Myers, Fagan, Samuels, Taylor, Dent. This looks like a potent weapon for the defense.
Yeah, and a big change. They did a little experimenting in the spring, and they took our leading tackler a year ago was a safety. And, you know, when you look at the stat sheet after every ball game and your safety is the leading tackler on the game, that means that they're getting a lot of yards if the safety's going to make those tackles. But they moved Hamza Nasruldeen from safety to what they call the star linebacker position. So he'll be closer to the line of scrimmage. He's a sure tackler, has a great instinct for where the football's going. He's a junior. He's been a leading tackler for the last couple of years. So Hamza Nasruldeen moving to linebacker, I think, solidifies the linebacker core, but also he can drop into coverage. Leonard Warner looked really good in the spring at linebacker. I think he might get one of those starting nods come Boise State in about 28, 29 days when FSU takes on the Broncos in Jacksonville. You mentioned Jaden Woodby. He's going to have a hyphenated name this year, Jaden Lars Woodby. He saw starting duty as a true freshman last year. Came in early, a five-star prospect from California, a young man that Willie Taggart recruited when he was the head coach at Oregon. And Jaden really loved Coach Taggart and the way he recruited him. And he said, hey, I'm going to go across country. I'm going to stay with you, Coach. But he was at the top five in tackles last year for the Seminoles. And I wouldn't expect him to drop off. He's moved now to strong safety from that star position. And he's very instinctive, will be a leader in the secondary. Asante Samuel and Stanford Samuels, those are two really, really good quarterbacks, and I have a strong suspicion they'll be starting. But there's going to be a lot of rotation. Doesn't matter whether you're a starter or not, if you're in that secondary, because a lot of these guys can play football at a very high level, and they're going to see action.
Let's look at the special teams now. The kicking game has potential, but certainly could up their consistency and efficiency. Tyler and Aguayo take care of kickoffs, field goals, punts. And let's also look at the return game. Matthews and Grant were the top two last season. What's it look like this fall?
Yeah, those will be your two starters. DJ Matthews is a touchdown week to happen, and we need to improve special teams blocking. A punt returner or a kick returner can't do it on his own, particularly in this day and age. DJ Matthews scored a huge punt return touchdown, his first career touchdown against Miami. And that gave Florida State a huge lead that unfortunately evaporated late in the ballgame thanks to turnovers and two quick scores by Miami. But DJ is the starting punt returner. He's also the starting slot receiver. And, I mean, the old Keith Jackson, he's quicker than a hiccup. He really is. Now, as far as kick return, Caleb LeBron may fit into that mix, too. But Anthony Grant was the primary kick returner at the end of last season. LeBron got injured and was unable to play most of the season. But he's back. He's healthy. He's ready to go. So those two are in the mix, but kickoff returners both can flat-out fly. And in limited duty last year, Kalen LeBourne, he only had three returns, was injured on a kickoff return, ironically, but he's also in the mix for, he's going to challenge Cam Akers for that number one running back position. So I don't know if it's going to be Grant or LeBourne and Grant, both as far as kick returns go. But again, the guys up front, you got to knock people over, you got to open a little hole, let those guys get a little daylight. They'll reach the end zone for the other end. As far as kickers go, Jim, experience, that's pretty bad. I'm trying to think the last time we had a punter. Well, maybe it was 4 years ago, but you got Aguayo returns. He and his brother have been tremendous kickers, and Ricky is Roberto's younger brother, and he's a senior this year. It's hard to believe that Ricky's going to be a senior. Then Logan Tyler is also a senior. He is the punter. And Logan Tyler last year, he was either one or two in the final standings as far as punting in the Atlantic Coast Conference. And I'm shocked that he's not getting some sort of preseason love by the pollsters of the ACC media. He averaged almost 43.5 yards a punt last year, and he's excellent kicking the ball inside the 20-yard line, forcing fair catches by opponents and limiting return opportunities. But Logan Tyler and Ricky Aguayo, I think, is a tremendous special teams combo.
Let's jump into the offense now. You tickled us a little bit earlier in the conversation about what Briles is bringing to the Seminoles. Yeah. Considering his history, dare I say I'll assume that he's implementing an up-tempo offense. If so, I have one simple question for you, Gene. Is it clicking with the team so far?
Well, absolutely. I'll say this. Up-tempo on steroids. That's the offense that Kendall Briles has. I mentioned 500-plus yards a game total offense last year when he was at Houston. They also scored almost 44 points a ball game. You know, you score 44 points a ball game, you get a chance to win a lot of football games, and that's what he brings. And an interesting thing, there are offenses that are complicated. There are offenses that are simple. And I remember the motto, the theme of Coach Taggart's first year a year ago with his own, lethal simplicity. Well, we weren't that simple, and we weren't that lethal last year. And this year, Kendall Briles is going to bring maybe the most simplified offensive scheme I've ever heard of. He has three plays, but they run variations off all three of those plays. And he says the reason why he doesn't want the offense complicated, he wants it executed. That's what he wants. And he says, I can't be looking at a play sheet and not watching the football game. So he's going to watch the football game. He's going to call the plays from the sideline. And there will be variations of just three plays. I can't wait to see it. and I certainly think it's going to be successful. You know, in football, if you're a player and you've got God-given talent, you're able to play at the ACC level. If you have to think a whole lot, sometimes that detracts from your natural God-given ability. But if you just go out there and play football, I think the kids like it, and I think it's going to be very successful for this Florida State team. And also, it will be up-tempo. It will be spread. The wideouts will be spread out to wide to either side. Probably won't see a fullback in there, and tight ends may come into play as an H-back type thing. I think you'll see a little bit more motion. You'll see James Blackman at quarterback, and I'm anxious to see that. He had one start last year, took a red shirt. You're able to play in four games. He played it all in four. He started one and passed for 421 yards against North Carolina State, threw four touchdowns in that ball game. So it's I think that James Blackman is going to be the real deal, and I can't wait to see him play as a starter on day one.
Well, I think that sort of answers the question that I have coming up behind center. Is it safe to say that James Blackman is the starting quarterback?
Yeah, you got Alex Hornibrook is going to be in that mix. He is a graduate student, transferred from the University of Wisconsin. And right now I have Blackman 1, Hornibrook 2. And those are the two scholarship quarterbacks that we know can play football. Jordan Travis is still waiting for the NCAA to clear him. He's a transfer from Louisville. And, you know, the NCAA transfer rules say you have to set out a year. But in hardship cases, the NCAA has approved immediate eligibility. They've done so in several instances this summer for football players transferring. But Jordan Travis is still waiting to see if he will be eligible by the NCAA to play instantly as a transfer this year. But right now it's Blackman and Hornibrook are the two quarterbacks that are on scholarship that are available to start against Boise State.
Let's talk about the unsung heroes that make an offense work. And these are the guys that give someone like Blackman enough time to make those critical decisions on who to pass to and who's open, and open the gaps for the running backs to get through and to make yardage. The offensive line. This is a critical piece of the Taggart turnaround puzzle. Six returning players on the roster, adding grad transfer Roberts, Ajuka, Williams, and, tell us about this line.
Well, it's gonna be better. It has to be better than it was a year ago. Injuries and probably not ready to play the spread offense was the biggest problem for the Florida State offensive line last year. They made a coaching change. Randy Clements comes in. I mentioned a former colleague of Kendall Briles, both at Baylor and at Houston, and that's quite a combo that Willie Taggart was able to hire away from Houston and bring Kendall Briles in, and he brings his good buddy and longtime friend Randy Clements into the mix. And Randy Clements has got a reputation of being a tremendous offensive line coach, and he's had success everywhere he's been, Baylor, Houston, and now at Florida State. The spread offense is a unique offense. And remember, Florida State head coach Jimbo Fisher was a pro-set quarterback coach. He recruited pro-set quarterbacks. He recruited pro-set kind of blockers, your tackles, block protection, the pass protection, your guards, pass protection, your center, pass protection. And the spread is a completely different offense. And I think you were trying to fit, you know, round pegs into square holes or vice versa a year ago. And injuries then hit three of our best offensive line prospects were injured for most of the season last year. So the combination certainly had a lot to do with FSU scoring just 33 touchdowns. I believe that was an ACC low, if I'm not mistaken. Offensive numbers were in the hundreds. I mean, Florida State used to be in the top 10, 15 in offensive categories, throwing the football, passing the football, running the football. And a year ago, we just could not. The offensive line had problems. This year, it looks like, at least on paper, and as we enter spring practice with no injuries, a much better offensive line. Big change. You got a brand new center in Babian Johnson. He replaces Alec Elberly, who was a three-year starter at center. But Mike Arnold, who was injured, missed a handful of games last year. He's solid at one guard. Cole Minshew, if he didn't have bad luck, he wouldn't have any luck at all. He's had leg and foot injuries his entire career. But he's penciled in as a starter at guard. You mentioned Ryan Roberts. I'm anxious to see how he plays because he fits into the mix. He played in a spread offense kind of offense when he played at Northern Illinois. I mean, basically the same spread offense that the Seminoles play, probably some variations. But Ryan Roberts is experienced in that. Juwan Williams, with another year under his belt, he started some games last year. I remember Coach Fisher, when he recruited him, said, I thought he could be maybe as good an offensive lineman as the Seminoles have ever had. But right now, because of injuries and coaching changes, he's still trying to earn that sort of credibility, and we'll find out if Juwan Williams is ready to go and play left tackle for the Noles. And then a big problem FSU had, not only the offensive line, but the defensive line, linebackers, was, and the secondary was depth. Depth when your starter got hurt or needed to get off the field and take a little breather. The guy that came in and replaced him wasn't necessarily a prime time player, and that was particularly true on the offensive line. But the depth is developing. And I think that, those starters, and I think they'll have two or three that will be able to come in. Jay Williams, you mentioned, the junior college transfer. I'm anxious to see how he does. They're not in pads until next week. And that's when I go out and watch a lot of practice, when they finally put the pads on and start knocking things around out there.
Well, let's talk about who Blackman sees when he looks over his shoulder and he gets ready to hand the rock off to someone. The running back stable. Who's there?
Well, Jim, you have to, I mean, we talked about Anthony Grant. He's pretty fast now. He's not the tallest guy on the backfield, but he's fast, and he's just a sophomore. But the starting running back right now is Cam Akers. Cam Akers set a new freshman record 2 years ago. He knocked out Dalvin Cook's 1,004-yard freshman record. He had 1,024, and that was 2 years ago. Last year, that fell off. He had less than 750 yards. The new offense, I think, had a part to do with it. The offensive line woes had a part to do with it. But Cam Akers in spring looked particularly sharp. And I think Cam Akers is going to return to the level of running back that we expect him to be and fans expect him to be. He was the number one running back prospect out of high school. But remember, he was a quarterback in high school. He converted to running back extremely well as a rookie. Then a coaching change, a position coach change, a head coach change, a scheme change, and offensive line problems. Cam Akers probably didn't really have the season he wanted as a sophomore, but maybe he'll call it a sophomore slump. Get that out of your system and come back. And if Cam Akers can rush for about 1,400 yards this year, the Noles are going to be pretty tough. Kalen LeBourne is the backup. And I work with William Floyd in the broadcast booth. William is a former Florida State Seminole, scored the only touchdown in the Noles championship, went over Nebraska in 1993, first-round draft pick by the San Francisco 49ers. And he's got a lot of friends that follow football, and they kept calling William and saying, hey, William, what about that LeBourne kid, man? He was the number one running back, blah, blah, blah. Why can't we see that when he redshirted his freshman year? And then he was injured last year. But what I've seen when Kalen has been healthy, he is an extremely good five-star prospect out of Virginia Beach. And so you got Akers, LeBourne, and Grant. You don't need many more running backs.
Let's look at wide receivers. This group has a great deal of depth and experience, something that you were alluding to earlier that may have been in short supply otherwise. Terry, Gavin, Helton, Matthews, give us the lowdown, because this is where I think Florida State can strategically pick apart their opponents.
Well, number one, Tamori and Terry is one of our two ACC media preseason first teamers. Tamori and Terry and Marvin Wilson, those are the only two. Put this in perspective, Clemson had 12 players, including the two wide receiver spots in the media's pick of the all preseason team. But Tamori and Terry, 6'4", he's not as heavy is Kelvin Benjamin, but he certainly reminds, I think, Seminole fans of the great KB that made that game-winning touchdown catch against Auburn. Terry is the real deal, a three-star recruit, but he certainly plays like a five-star player to me. He's from a little tiny school, the Turner County High School up in Georgia. And Tamori and Terry is the guy that James Blackman's going to – he's going to find that number 15 some way, somehow. D.J. Matthews, we talked about. D.J. is slot receiver. He's very, very quick, runs good routes, and tough to tackle. He needs a little bit of size. He doesn't have that, but slot receiver, you don't need to be real big. Krishan Harrison is a young man that really recruited out of the state of Washington when he was at Oregon. And Krishan, just like Woodby, followed the head coach down to Tallahassee, Florida. I think he could have a breakout season. Right now he's behind the guy you mentioned, Keith Gavin. Gavin is a senior. And you know what? Keith Gavin has scored just one career touchdown. And he came out of high school as a five-star prospect. Felipe Phillips, who quarterbacks at Florida, was the five-star quarterback. And Gavin was a five-star receiver. And he just hasn't – I don't know whether it's the change of quarterbacks. Francois gets hurt. New quarterback Blackwood comes in. Last year, Francois back, new offensive scheme. But Keith Gavin just looks like a tremendous football prospect. And right now he's a senior leader on the team. And he will get the starting nod at that flanker position. Gavin, backed up by Treshawn Harrison. A guy that really looked good in the spring is Keyshawn Helton from Pensacola, Florida. He plays that slot receiver. He took a long one in the spring game. In fact, led the team he played for in the spring game in receptions and yards. And so I think he'll be in the mix too. So you got about four. You got about five wide receivers that will attract the attention of James Blackman, and somebody's going to get over. We got some pretty good talent at wideout.
Let's talk about the schedule. The opener is Boise State, by no means a pushover. It'll be a good show and tell game. The Seminoles can show us what they've got going on, and we can tell everyone about it. You jump into the ACC schedule September 14th at Virginia, and not to dismiss anyone else, but the big challenges are Clemson, Miami, and Florida. Your thoughts on this schedule?
Well, the schedule this year is, I guess I could use the word manageable. Last year's was absolutely as tough a schedule as I can recall. You got to go back to 1981 when Florida State played that, what we call the Oktoberfest schedule, where Florida State had to play on the road at Nebraska, at LSU, at Ohio State, at Notre Dame, and at Pittsburgh. And almost all of those games were in a row. And Bobby Bowden knew that. He took the job in 76. But the last year's schedule was similar to that one, and we took the slumps, the slings and the arrows. We finished 5-7. We had trouble on the road. We had trouble at home. We couldn't score. We couldn't stop anybody. We gave up too much. But anyway, this schedule is more manageable. That Boise State, you know, Boise State didn't reach. They're not in the top 25 of the coaches poll, but you go to those teams receiving votes, and they're number 27. And, you know, there's no number 27 in the poll, Jim, but they got 118 points. I think that's good for 27th. If you're counting, and we have to open against the team that always opens against rugged opponents and always plays exceptionally well in first games. Got seven returning starters on offense. They have to find a new quarterback. And from what I'm seeing in preparing for that broadcast on August the 31st, they've got a young freshman quarterback that, may be in the mix to take Boise State for the next 4 years into some Mountain West championships. But Boise State is always a tough out. Doesn't matter whether you play them on the blue turf out there, or you play them at a neutral site like we are in Jacksonville. But that, I'll tell you, that's a crucial game for both of these teams. Florida State needs to win that ball game if we want to have a great season. You got to win your opener, and it's in Jacksonville, Florida. Then you come home, play Louisiana Monroe, should take care of business there. And then, my goodness, you go up to play Virginia in Virginia. At the media kickoff in Charlotte a couple of weeks ago, Virginia was the talk of the Coastal Division. They're number one in the preseason ranking by the media. Second is Miami, and we play both of those teams out of the Coastal. So those are our two Coastal opponents. Yeah, Louisville's got a new coach, new program, new players all over the place, and I think Louisville's going to take a year to get back to where they want to be. You get North Carolina State at home, a team that always plays FSU tough, but last year they beat us and sort of spanked us pretty good in the second half, and FSU probably owes them one. And then you got to go to Clemson, Death Valley, and take on a team that everybody predicts to win another national championship. That'd be three out of the last four. That's a tall order for any football team to go into Death Valley and try to win. Don't know if it could be done this year, but we'll see. And then you get the second half of the season, Jim. Florida State plays Wake Forest at Wake, and you know Wake is always a tough team for the Noles, particularly in Winston-Salem. Dave Clawson does a tremendous job with his defenses, and we'll wait and see how the Noles do on the road. Then you get a team that is picked second in the Atlantic Division by the media, and that is Syracuse, coming off a 10-2 record a year ago. This or 10-3 record last year. This Syracuse team, they run the same offense Florida State does. Hurry, 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 hurry. Spread offense. And Dino Babers will have them ready to go again. They got a new quarterback. We'll find out how that works out. But they finished the season ranked number 15. They're getting a lot of love in this preseason. Let's see how it works. And then our arch rival, Miami, comes to Tallahassee, Florida. We had them beat last year. They have a new coach. Most of the players return on that team. Their defense is solid. Linebackers are great. But they're picked to finish second, as I mentioned, in the Coastal Division. Then you go on the road to play Boston. The last time the Seminoles went up to Beantown and played the Boston College Eagles, we laid a flat-out egg, and it wasn't an eagle egg. We just laid an egg. I think we scored one touchdown in the ball game. Our biggest play was a trick play, and we just could not stop that bruising running game of the Boston College Eagles and A.J. Dillon. I'd like to see how we do this year. Let's hope the Seminole team shows up and plays better football than we did 2 years ago. And then we finish up with a bought game against Alabama State at home and then go on the road to play another big rival. That's Florida. Oh, by the way, they're ranked number 8 in the preseason poll. So the Gators, we won 4 in a row down in Gainesville. So maybe we'll make it 5 in a row and make it a full decade where Florida fans have gone home unhappy against the Seminoles from Florida Field.
Before we wrap things up, let me just share this. Gene Deckerhoff has been the voice of the Florida State basketball program since 74, football since 79. He does baseball on TV. He's been the voice of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers since 85, and that's just a snapshot of his adventures in sports media. The rest and the stories that go with it, well, they would fill multiple programs that we would absolutely love to do. It's been an honor to have you on the show, Gene.
Well, Jeff, it's always great talking football. This is my favorite time of the year. It's a hard work time of the year, preparing for two different teams and getting ready for the that first game. You know, depth charts are tough to come by. But until you get right there at game time. But I've been working during the quote-unquote offseason. In fact, I start working on college football and college basketball season, building depth charts, doing matchups, the stats from, you know, all the teams you play, and putting that together. If you don't get a head start, you're way behind when the season kicks off. And that North Carolina State game, Jim, is going to be a big game for me. That'll be my 500th. Florida State broadcast of football. I'm looking forward to that. That's certainly a milestone for me, and I can't wait to get this season going.
With that, we'll wrap up our time with Gene Deckerhoff, the voice of the Florida State Seminoles. Thank you for spending some time talking with us about the program, Gene. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, my pleasure, Jim, and look forward to talking with you during the season, talking Florida State football, and hopefully Florida State winning football. Go Noles!
No matter how much background you have, how much research you've done, or how confident your crystal ball allows you to see into the future, deciding on where 15 teams rank without the benefit of a game is a dangerous leap of faith, kind of like that AP Top 25. The ACC Nation Power Poll debuts this week, along with our pigskin picks in week 0. Will, we're confident about number 1.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah. It's number 15 that we have issues with. We're all not seeing eye to eye. That's not unusual. It could be teams in the midst of rebuilds, at least from a program standpoint. That could mean Georgia Tech, Louisville, North Carolina, where we not only have scheme changes, but coaching changes. Lots of reasons to look at these three teams and maybe another or two as being the team that becomes a cellar dweller. But then again, maybe not a cellar dweller. There's a lot of potential among these teams. I like what I'm seeing with the coaches and the scheme changes. Your thoughts on at least three of these teams and maybe somebody else that you might be thinking about that's down there in that lower tier of the ACC.
Yeah, there are a lot of question marks at the bottom of the league this year, and it all pertains to the coaching changes. When you look at Louisville, but we'll start there. I mean, when getting who I will say was the best hire in the offseason is already an improvement, and getting rid of Brian Van Gorder's defensive coordinator was all a smart move altogether. And I think they're going to, there's no doubt in my mind they're going to be better this year just because the defense will actually play defense this year. We'll see where the offense goes. I'm still not sure they're super talented there, but they aren't going to look like a train wreck like they've been like last season. I say with North Carolina, there's there's talent there, especially on offense, but the question has always been defense, and we'll see where that goes. You know, they've been so atrocious on defense for a number of years now, and they've been routinely near the bottom of college football in terms of defense. But hiring Jay Bateman from Army, who was really good there, that was a huge hire for him. They're going to be better. You know, you're going to get a disciplined defense, for sure. You know, Georgia Tech, there's just, you know, a lot going on there with just new offensive scheme and a 21st century scheme on offense. But how quickly will all that mesh? I mean, they're getting the reps in practice and all that, but it has to translate over to the field with, you know, opponents with a different color jersey on the field. They say they're going to need a little bit of time. I mean, they could still, you know, surprise some people this year for sure. You know, we might have Duke down there too, and that's just because they were such a veteran team last year, and they lost so many players to graduation or Daniel Jones to the NFL that they're just not a lot of experience back. And this is going to be, you know, a test for David Cutcliffe this year, but you can't really ever count Duke out as long as Cutcliffe is on the sidelines.
Well, we won't know for sure if it's one of these teams or could it be another. We'll find out this week with the Week 0 ACC Nation Power Poll. It's unveiled this week along with our pigskin picks. And now, will Dino Babers and Tommy DeVito be able to deliver another successful season? We continue the Voices of Football preview series with Matt Park, the voice of the Syracuse Orange. Outside the Syracuse circle, maybe even in it, media have raised a lot of questions about Tommy DeVito. People point to his hit-and-miss performances as a freshman when he stood in for Eric Dungy. I'm tossing this concept of garbage time in the phraseology trash heap where it belongs. Game time is game time. Starters or expanding your experience base. So DeVito had some low points, but definitely had some promising moments. Tell us about what his strengths are and what we can expect this season, Matt.
Well, it's hard to know exactly what to expect because he's got to get out there and do it as the regular guy. He was a relief pitcher last year. You know, really, he only had maybe one garbage time appearance, and that was Western Michigan. His other games, he came in meaningful situations. He won in relief in the North Carolina and Florida State games, and he came in due to injury, you know, kind of an emergency in the Notre Dame game and got buried. And I think any freshman thrown into that situation against a very good team was going to have a tough time. He's an accurate passer. I think he's well-schooled from a major high school program in New Jersey and has been in a lot of the camps and the 7-on-7s and those types of things. I think he shows at this point very good leadership skills. He's not quite as big as Eric Dungy. He might be as fast. He's maybe not as prone to running. But the jury is still out in terms of what is he going to bring play in and play out as the guy, you know, that'll be scouted for and everything else. So I think the future is bright for him. I think he's got a great deal of potential. It's just a matter of showing it right now.
Let's get into running backs. If my stats are right, Eric Dungy had more carries last year. We may see DeVito scampering a bit as well, as you're kind of alluding to. He can run. There's no doubt about it, and people who are saying otherwise really haven't watched closely. Mo Neal was the top back, was efficient catching passes out of the backfield. It looks like the rock got spread out a bit last year. Who steps up and adds more of a running threat for Syracuse?
Well, I think they have a lot of options there. Mo Neal's the most experienced, and he'll certainly get his opportunities. I think there's a lot of talent behind him and around him. Jarvion Howard, as a freshman last year, is a really hard runner, tree trunk type legs. Abdul Adams the transfer from Oklahoma, is probably the most talented. He had to sit out all of last year for a transfer and then actually did play in the bowl game and punched it in at the goal line a couple of times. I think everybody's excited to see what he brings. They've got a freshman named Jawar Jordan who might be the fastest of the running backs. So there's more depth and more options there than in any year in recent memory for me. So I think there's a lot of opportunity. I don't think they'll have the quarterback runs this year for lots of reasons. They're not going to call those types of plays, I don't think, for DeVito. DeVito's more prone to extending the play to pass than he is to run like Dungy did. And there's a little bit more of a fall off from the starter to the backup quarterback in this situation. So I think it'd be a little risky to ask DeVito to do what Dungy did.
Well, we're talking about a guy with basically a cannon that we really haven't seen that much of, but he can pass. There's no doubt about it. And when it comes to wide receivers, you guys are stacked, man. Taj Harris, Sean Riley, Nakeem Johnson. Can we expect an aerial barrage this season?
Well, that's what the system does. They spread it around a lot. It's a short passing game. They do take their share of shots, too. All three of those receivers that you mentioned caught at least 40 balls last year, and Riley caught better than 60. Riley's a little guy, 5'9", and, 170 pounds or whatever, but he runs away from people. He finds gaps in the defense, and that's what they're designed to do, and play up tempo and then work their way into throwing the deep ball. I expect him to have a big year, both as a receiver and a kick returner. And then the more newly recruited wide receivers are bigger looking targets. They're better get off the bus guys. And right now, how they develop and at what rate, still is an open question, but I think that there's a budding talent and some potential there.
Well, with everything on this side of the ball, if you don't have a fluid line, no time to pass, no holes to run through. So three starters are gone, but three players with experience return. Some names, Evan Adams transfers, Ryan Alexander, Darius Tisdale. Is this line clicking?
It's too early to say. How would anybody know? A couple of those guys, as you point out, are transfers that were not even here for spring ball. So they've just got a couple of practices under their belt at this point, and you aren't really going to know until you're in real games. So, it's the same old cliches everybody says about the offensive line. You're only as strong as your weakest link. The cohesiveness of what they're doing there is really more important than any individual skill. I think last year they had to deal with transfers, and it worked. They've got a new offensive line coach starting last year. I think he does a good job, and Mike Kavanaugh. So right now I think they're okay there, but remains to be seen. There is a lot of experience, guys who, in the case of, where there's been an injury, somebody's filled in for the season. Sam Heckel, as in theory, a backup, has played a lot of football. So Aaron Service has been the center the last 2 years. Looks like he might play tackle. There's some different ways to look at it and some versatility.
So Matt Babers is in his fourth year. Looking from the outside in, coach seems like a cool, calm, collected sort of character. But you also immediately notice an underlying intensity. You've had a few years to watch and listen, observe him on and off the field. Give us your impressions of Dino Babers.
Well, there's a lot of things. I mean, we could fill up your whole show with impressions on him because he's a very interesting person. I think the most important thing is he makes genuine connections with his players, and that's what's made him a good recruiter. That's what's allowed him to build here. I think the players really trust him. He's a straight shooter. He's not going to sugarcoat it for them in terms of what the situation is or where your position is on the depth chart, that type of thing, and I think that's all the players ask for. He's been able to retain his staff. The strength and conditioning coach, Sean Ettinger, does a really good job. He's made major improvements as predicted here, and they were able to retain the entire coaching staff from last year. Even, when you win 10 games, people come after your coaches. When you have maybe the best special teams unit in the country, people come after your special teams coach and that type of thing. And all of those gentlemen have stayed for another year. And many of those guys go back, two and three stops with Babers, to Bowling Green in Eastern Illinois. So I think that's important. It shows how he leads his program, and he's a really exciting, fun guy to be around.
We'll look forward to talking a little bit more about special teams here in just a few moments, but let's get down into the nitty-gritty of defense. We'll start with the line. Three return in the middle, including Kenneth Ruff. Defensive ends, Alton Robinson and Kendall Coleman are part of this. Get after it defense. Are we going to be seeing more getting after it this season from Syracuse?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously you want to pressure the passer. Alton Robinson is really gifted. He's a Big 12 caliber recruit and has come into his own and blossomed. I think he had a great season last year. Kendall Coleman had a tremendous bowl game. Coleman's a bit undersized, but he's speedy, gets around the tackle and puts a lot of pressure on the tackle and quarterback. The defensive tackle position is arguably the biggest loss from last year with Chris Slayton going pro. He was a quiet person that did a lot of disruptive work from the D-tackle position. You never really think about those guys, but he did a really good job. Mackenzie Williams is a guy that will step into his spot and try to make up for that loss as best he can. I think the defensive line is strong. I think the defensive backfield is strong. And then, again, this year it's kind of a new core of linebackers, so that'll be a focal point.
Well, let's talk about those linebackers. That's been impacted a bit by turnover. There are two guys that are stepping up, though, Armstrong, Richards. Tell us a little bit more about strengths and weaknesses there.
Hard to say. Those guys have been special teams players largely and special situations. They've played a bit. I mean, they're not rookies by any stretch. Richards is kind of a hybrid outside linebacker, defensive end type Canadian kid who's worked hard in the weight room in his time here. And he'll flash. He'll make a play every now and again. You'll look up and he was the guy that beat his blocker or what have you. Armstrong is a stocky, try hard guy, very good high school baseball player. Just over time, kind of grew out of those types of positions and into middle linebacker. Sticks his face in there, and I think likes the idea of being in the middle of the defense and the contact and a leader. There'll be a lot of pressure on those guys because they're a little greener, I think. But and to say that that's the question area or the weaker part of the defense really is more of a compliment to the other areas because there's a lot of experience on this defense. I've been around the program a long time. I don't recall the defense having as much experience as this group does and some playmakers. So they just don't happen to be at the linebacker level right now.
When you talk about the experience aspect, and this is a thing that I've noticed, there's an awful lot of sophomores on this roster, which means the future looks pretty bright for both the offense and the defense.
Yeah, I think these guys are pretty good recruiters. As you get a little bit of success, they beat Clemson at home in 2017. The year before that, they beat a ranked Virginia Tech team. That kind of gets a little splash, and it helps you make some recruiting gains. And now you start to see the payoff of that. But guys who came in last year as freshmen in particular, defensive backs, Andre Schmidt had literally an All-American season as a freshman. Trill Williams is a big playmaker, was a freshman last year. So those guys are now sophomores. And, in the case of Schmidt, when you lead the nation in interceptions, you wind up on everybody's All-America lists and that type of thing. I'm sorry, Andre Sisco. He's not going to sneak up on anybody, and that kind of then meshes with guys who've been around. Evan Foster, this staff recruited to Bowling Green, to give you an idea, and he's stepped up his level. He's a hard hitter. So those guys are, I think licking their chops they have some pride about the turnover margin last year and some of the things they were able to do. If they are able to repeat that at all, then they're setting the table for really good things.
We'll get into recruiting a little bit more in detail here in just a second, but looking at that secondary, one thing that comes to mind here, this is an area where I think Syracuse should be making opponents sweat. From corners to safety, this is without a doubt the solid group on that defense.
Yeah, I mean, those guys have been there a long time. Chris Fredericks played a lot of football, Scoop Bradshaw. These guys can really play. I think they're good cover corners. you know, broke in kind of a special teams player, just like, you know, this is a story of a lot of other players at other programs, but you put in that investment in time so that when they are juniors and seniors, they've seen a lot of everything. They've studied the film. They've been, you know, worked with the coaches for, you know, months and years. And this is where you kind of hope that pays off. I think going into the season in terms of the DBs, you got to feel pretty comfortable about the depth there. Now, there's always going to be an injury or some fluky thing that sidelines somebody, and that's what you hope to make up for. That's part of the game.
So let's jump into this recruiting now. This is always a big question, and sometimes there are gold mines in your own backyard, and often coaches will, wherever they're coming from, will use that as their connection. Where is Syracuse finding the most fortune when it comes to recruiting?
Well, I think you have to work hard to recruit at Syracuse because there aren't players in your backyard. You know, in the whole state of New York, there's 10 or 12 Division I players every year, 10 or 12, you know, in one high school in Miami, there could be that many, you know, so, or certainly in one league. So that is what you're up against in terms of recruiting. And I think Syracuse coaches have to be creative. They tend to have to go on the road to find people. They try to get the best of New York and New England, and historically they have, and this staff makes connections here and there. But the move to the ACC has opened up that footprint a little bit. So there are some Carolina kids. There are Georgia kids. Everybody recruits Florida, so that's nothing new, and Syracuse historically has done well recruiting Florida. So there's some guys there. The quarterback coach is a guy named Kirk Martin. He was a renowned high school coach in Texas, so it's, you know, used to be unheard of to get a Texas player. Now it's not unheard of. You know, Jarvion Howard is from the same high school as Walter Payton in Mississippi. I think he's maybe the first ever Mississippi high school kid to come to Syracuse to play. So this group has been creative. I think if you look statistically, they make more scholarship offers than almost every school. They really get out there and get after it, and they know what they're doing, and they just have to kind of maybe go about it a different way. It's not as easy as driving the car around and swooping up area high school players, because with no disrespect meant to that group around here, there just aren't a lot of big-time college prospects here.
Let's look at another hot spot on the team, special teams. You've got a place kicker that is phenomenal. A last-year freshman, he gets called upon to deliver, has a superb year. Andre Schmidt, punter Sterling Hoffrichter, and returns handled by Sean Riley. Reflect on their performances last year, and are there any changes on this front?
You know, I don't know if there may be in the return game if they try to get a younger guy in there and maybe not expose Riley so much because he has a chance to be the lead receiver. Return game wasn't spectacular last year. It was fine. Riley's not really a game breaker. He's so small that the positive is maybe he slips through a crack, but once he's hit on a kickoff return, he's generally going down. So that has not been an explosive aspect of the game. Maybe that changes. Either he improves or they put somebody else in there or have a little bit of a different approach. But the kickers are outstanding. Andre Schmidt came, you know, a week before the season last year. He was an afterthought. We didn't even know he was going to play in the first game. And he comes out and makes kick after kick after kick, and he had some range. He had as good a season as almost really has ever been had in college football. He was 30 of 34. So important to know when you approach the red zone, let alone get in it, you're getting points on the board, generally speaking. They had very few empty trips last year. Is that something that follows up from one year to the next? I don't know. We've seen decent kickers before, maybe not back it up in their sophomore or junior seasons or the year after their breakout year. Schmidt is a easygoing guy, totally unassuming, not somebody caught up in the hype or the Groves Award or any of that at all. So it'll be interesting to see. I think he's the type of guy where this doesn't really affect him. I would expect him to have another good year and keep repeating that throughout his career. Sterling Hoffrichter is probably a pro punter. Absolutely booms it, has some variety. He'll roll out from time to time and do it that way. I think they've got maybe the best combination of kickers in the country, and it probably doesn't get enough of attention, but you win games that way.
Let's look at the schedule now. The season begins with a team that people shouldn't overlook, mainly because they're going to try that much harder to make a name for themselves as newbies in the FBS, and that's Liberty. Then the gauntlet, Maryland, followed by Clemson. And then the ACC schedule gets into full swing October 10th with the likes of NC State, Pitt, FSU, Boston College. Your thoughts on the schedule this season?
Well, it remains to be seen. I think there has been a movement to lighten the schedule a little bit here because of how daunting the ACC schedule. I mean, when you play Clemson every year, you know, you're in for a big boy, and you got Florida State as well, and you've got, you know, NC State or Louisville, whoever's, you know, top team at that time. And Syracuse historically has played a very ambitious schedule. They open on the road again this season, and that's reflective of the dome renovation. So it happens to be at Liberty, at Maryland. Those are two places where I think Syracuse will go in with more talented teams, certainly in Liberty's case, maybe not as much in Maryland. But both of those places have new coaches and good coaches, guys who really can draw plays, and you don't really know exactly how to prepare for them and what they're going to do. I think those are perilous kind of games. Western Michigan, Holy Cross, you don't get a lot of credit for beating them, but you got to do it. And then you get, you know, a bye week sort of, and then into the meat of your conference schedule. So that's kind of what's ahead. The Clemson game will be the, you know, if both teams come into that one 2-0, that'll be the biggest game in the dome in 20 years. And, you know, I think there won't be enough hype for that. Syracuse is, I don't know that they'll be able to continue it, but Syracuse has played Clemson very tough the last 2 years, beat them 2 years ago, and could have won last year in Death Valley. So that one is one that has people very excited.
Well, with that, we'll wrap up our time with Matt Park, the voice of the Syracuse Orange. I want to thank you for joining us, Matt, and sharing your thoughts on the program.
All right, man. Appreciate it.
Be sure to subscribe to ACC Nation Podcast. Click on our subscription option at accnation.net or join us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, or Blueberry. While you're there, we'd appreciate a rating and or review. We're streaming 365 24/7 at ACC Nation Radio. We continue to be added to streaming sites such as RadioGuide.fm and Radio Garden, with more to come. You can find those on our links page or follow the link on our homepage. Be sure to follow us on social media. We're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Simply type in ACC Nation. And of course, we'd all appreciate a personal follow as well on Twitter. Will is at WillsWorldMN. Xavion at XAYVEON. And I'm at ACC The Q. Until next time, cheers.
School.